I'd just like to ask a question to Mike on Hamas must have known that the retaliation would be severe when they did this, and you understand hopelessness and can't be surprised at people reacting as they did, but it's not Hamas that are getting the retaliation, it's civilians.
Yep. This is the seventh major attack on Gaza where the Israeli military has used its full force, and overwhelmingly the casualties are civilians. Sometimes the ratio between Israeli casualties and Palestinians in Gaza has been 100 to 1. So for every one dead Israeli, it'd be 100 Palestinians. So when Hamas has engaged in hostilities with Israel, and there's been different reasons in each of those previous six attacks, they are aware of the price they're going to pay, but they're responding to something. On this occasion, there's a lot of mystery about the nature of this attack, because in the past, Israel has been prepared to kill a couple of thousand Palestinians on the base of two or three or four Israelis killed by Hamas. So clearly, if Hamas is going to go on some sort of killing spree, which is what we're being told has happened, they can expect the worst. Mm. So there's a mystery as to why Hamas didn't limit themselves to a military operation targeting soldiers, or if they want to take soldiers hostage to secure the release of Palestinians that are held hostage and imprisoned by Israel, why they didn't do that. It makes no sense for Hamas to have deliberately set out on a mass slaughter, and I can't understand it.
And how, in the most secure border supposedly in the world, did they get there?
Well, this is the other thing. At this point, we have to take it at face value, and we have no problem in condemning the murder of civilians and the abduction of civilians, whether they be Israeli Jews or Palestinians. But there are a lot of questions about this attack. We're now hearing from people, a commander of the Israeli border forces, who said, look, you know, a mouse couldn't get through that border. How could 1,500 armed men come in, engage in firefights, take hostages, and some of them massacre people? How could that happen? We've had news reports that, and look, from the Washington Post, as it's been reported, that the Egyptian government advised the Israeli government of a big attack 3 days before. So it appears that the Israeli government had foreknowledge. They have the most powerful surveillance and control apparatus in the world along that border. They have surveillance right across Gaza. They can tell if you blow your nose crossing a street in Gaza. They have their high concentration of military around that border. They have a capacity for very, very rapid response. And yet somehow 1,500 militants, fighters, managed to get in, stay there for hours, not be responded to, go on a killing spree, and then it happens to neatly sit with the policies that the Israeli government has been talking about. And the things they've been talking about that have been articulated by people like Bezalel Smotrich, who's one of the more outspoken ultranationalists, is we should have finished the job of 1948. We should have gotten rid of all the Palestinians then, and it's not too late. That's one of the things they talk about. The other is the Israeli government is not prepared to implement the peace deals that would put an end to the cycle of terror and violence. So what they prefer to do is to bomb Gaza. So here you have a mass terror attack, which is inexplicable as to how the Palestinians managed it and why the Israelis couldn't stop it. And we have this mass terror attack occurring with the foreknowledge, apparently, of the Israeli government that it was going to happen, according to the Egyptian government. And it happens to open the way for not just an assault on Gaza, but to enable another ethnic cleansing similar to what happened in 1948 under the cover of war. So people are looking at this and saying there's more to this than meets the eye. When the Israeli government says to the 2.5 million Palestinians in Gaza, flee south. People know what that means. That's never been done before. And in the context of members of the Israeli government talking about finishing the job of 1948, people are expecting that this operation is not just about the destruction of Hamas or the taking revenge, but about a new round of ethnic cleansing to kick the Palestinians out of Gaza. The Israeli government said just in the last few days, 20-odd hospitals in the north of Gaza must be evacuated. They didn't explain where those patients, doctors, equipment, structures could be evacuated to, how they could be evacuated through a war zone with no electricity, no water, and roads in ruins, and no fuel. And it was denounced as essentially genocidal in its implications. I mean, this was basically saying you people can die, we don't care. And then we've had the attack in the last couple of days on a hospital which had been warned to evacuate. And now, in times of war, there's always going to be conflicting stories as to responsibility, but it fits within the previous Israeli demand the hospitals be evacuated. It's the attack in its brutality is consistent with what we've seen the Israelis do, use one missile to bring down the entire apartment block with not much concern for people. And the hospital administration themselves said that they were told a couple of days before to get out, and that there'd actually been some lower level military strike on them. So it's a horrific atrocity, and I don't think it'll be the last.
And you want this to get out, your knowledge to get out as far as possible?
Our desire is to see a peaceful resolution to the conflict where everyone in the region can live with equal rights and security. We don't want to see continual war. We think peace is possible, but it's not possible if it's simply left to the actors involved. The Palestinians are too weak and the Israelis are too strong. It needs the international community to be involved, and they need to be involved along the base of well-established international laws, United Nations resolutions, and the peace agreements that the Israelis and Palestinians have signed. That is the only way to get out of the recurrence of these terrible, terrible human disasters. This is now the seventh attack on Gaza in 16 years, since 2006. It's got to stop.
Can't see how.
It's not looking very positive at the moment. The most powerful actor in the world is the United States government, and they've been aiding and abetting Israel diplomatically for decades and arming them. And at this point, the Americans have two of their carriers off the Israeli coast. They're actually committing troops there in allegedly some sort of support role, logistics or ammunition supply, or as a disincentive to Iran to become involved. But rather than make Israel fulfill its obligations under the peace treaties that the Americans themselves brokered, mm-hmm. They are encouraging Israel down the path of, if the Palestinians resist, kill them and destroy whatever organisations they have, even at the risk of a regional war, which could be a nuclear war. That's the stark reality. So the world has gone crazy.
It has. Where can you go from there?
That's a place to end it on.
There's not much further to go, is there?
No. So the people of goodwill will always keep struggling, whether they be here or in Israel or in Palestine. But the situation in the present period, in respect to the big questions of war and peace and unnecessary human suffering, the big questions are really not being addressed in a way that is going to take us to a happy resolution.
Well, that's right. Yep. And if it becomes on a world scale, well, that's oblivion.
It is. Mm. It is. Mm. So humanity will have undone itself.
Mm. How stupid is that?
It's absolutely stupid. Mm. And at such a tremendous cost, and so totally avoidable.
Mm. So is there a note of hope to end on?
Yes. We can't predict the way things go in the future. Sometimes people come to the brink and they turn back. Sometimes people are so horrified by where they've reached that they will look at something anew. But ultimately, it's really an argument for those of us that can to get involved in trying to fight for a better world. But also, these days, we have to fight for the freedom to fight for a better world. So freedom of conscience and freedom of speech, the freedom to organise, even the freedom to assemble peacefully, these things have now been threatened. And they've been used in some places against the right and some places against the left. And here they've tried to use them against people supporting Palestine. So any person of conscience needs to take that as their starting point, that you can't work towards a better world if you don't have the freedom to express yourself, to read what you want, to assemble peacefully, to petition your members of parliament, to be active in your trade union. These basic freedoms now have to be defended. And so we've got a double battle. It's the battle to be able to struggle for a better world and that struggle itself. If enough people get involved, you can make progress. The only other alternative is to do nothing.